Pop Spotting 115.
Friday, August 26th, 2011.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's Feedback Friday, so first up, as always, your calls on the Pop Spotting voicemail line.
We love hearing your voices and love sharing voices besides our own, so let's hear from those of you who did call in at 815-310-0808.
Hey, Jen, and hey, Ryan. This is Mike Ruggieri, Mike in Virginia. I used to listen to the transmission, met you guys in Honolulu in 08. I've been catching up on Pop Spotting. I've been doing a lot of traveling, listening to you. I've been in the car like 150 miles a day for my job the last couple of weeks. And so really catching up on Pop Spotting. And I just had a call. It's an old one, and I know you probably got a lot of Friday feedback. You guys were talking about Modern Family, and then you haven't seen it. You guys should try to catch up on that, I believe. I love Big Bang Theory, but I think Modern Family is hands down the funniest show on television. I mean, it's laugh out loud funny. It's one of the few shows I actually watch on the same night because I'm a big TiVo guy and I watch everything sort of late. And I do actually watch that as it airs or right after it airs. I can't recommend it highly enough. And Julie Bowen, of course, is great. It's just a great show. Hopefully by now, I think that podcast I'm listening to is probably 3 months old or so. You probably have caught up on it or maybe have sampled it. Anyway, just wanted to put my two cents in. I also love the one about the California songs. What you guys were saying about Led Zeppelin just really was great. I've been a Led Zeppelin fan my whole life. I saw them when I was 13, changed my life. I also saw them again when I was 15. And I just recently, I'm 49 years old, and dragged my wife up to Atlantic City to see Robert Plant. That must be like the 25th time I've seen him in my life. Yeah, just like I said, saw them at 13 years old and changed my life. So anyway, love the show. Gotta keep more current with it. Talk to you guys soon. Hope all is well. Bye.
Thanks for your call, Mike. Wow, an old friend there, and certainly glad to have you catching up with us here at Pop Spotting.
Yeah, it's great to hear from you, Mike.
Now, did you ever see Led Zeppelin live, Miss Led Zeppelin fan?
No, they broke up in 1980 when I was young.
Young, okay. But, you know, Robert Plant is still around. He's
yeah,
still touring.
Yeah, he is, and I hear he really puts on a pretty decent show.
So hopefully he'll come out to Hawaii. But yet another recommendation. I think this is probably the 8th or 9th strong endorsement for Modern Family. What do you say, Jen?
Let's do it.
Okay, so there you've got it. We are going to finally dive into the series that so many of you love so much. We want to see what it's all about, and you'll probably hear our take later on in Pop Spotting. Let's go to our next call.
Hey, Ryan and Jen, it's Daniel from Boston. I just listened to your surprise bonus review of Glee, the 3D concert movie. I have not seen it, although I'm really looking forward to that. My daughter has and absolutely loved it. She went with her grandparents, but I'm probably going to wind up going myself. I'm a Gleek as well. So great review. Looking forward to it. One thing just to let you know, in case you weren't aware, the Warblers are actually voiced by the Tufts University Beelzebubs. The Beelzebubs are an a cappella group that actually is here in the Boston area in Medford, Massachusetts. And they're a pretty famous a cappella group. They were on the Sing-Off, which was a show that was on. It was a reality TV competition show for a cappella groups. And they're a phenomenal group. So again, they're called the Bubs, but that's short for Beelzebubs. And they're the ones who actually voiced the songs for the Glee series for the Warblers. I'm not sure if they were in the movie or not. That's an interesting question. I don't know if maybe you could look that up and answer that. But I know they're the ones who actually provided the vocals. And Darren Criss actually traveled, I think, to New York to actually meet with the Bubs and do some recording with them for the show. So the guys you see on the TV show actually are not the singers for the Warblers. They were just cast to be dance/body doubles, I guess. The Warblers are actually the ones the Beelzebubs are actually the ones who performed the vocals. So anyway, I hope that was informative, if not long-winded. Keep up the great work, and thanks for all you do. Bye.
Thanks for your call, Daniel. And, you know, I'm impressed that you came out as a Gleek, and our daughter will be very happy to hear that there's at least one other there listening to Pop Spotting. And no, I had no idea about any of this stuff. I'm a little worried that now I do know this stuff, but I did check with Katie, and she says that the setup in the movie, which you enjoyed quite a bit.
I did enjoy it.
Is the same as it is on the show, which is that the great vocals of those background singers are still these bubs, this a cappella group that is quite well known, and it is only Darren Criss in the foreground that's singing live. Still a good show, a good time.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
And let's get to our next call.
Hey, Ryan and Jen, this is Don from Baltimore calling in for Pop Spotting. Just got done listening to Game of Thrones and have to agree with everything you guys said. That was an absolutely excellent show. I'm actually going back and listening to the books on from audible.com, and are finding the books to be just as excellent as the film or TV series was, and the way that they've been able to follow it with the with HBO, they've done a very good job. I'm about a quarter of the way through the book, of following it, and it's been fantastic, and it's been a good review trying to learn all those names and towns and cities and people by listening to it on the book and reviewing it. But what I really wanted to call in and talk to you guys about was The Killing. I had listened to Jay and Jack and you guys and a bunch of people about how upset they were with the finale of The Killing. And I just finished it yesterday on the airplane on my way back from New Orleans. And I have to disagree with everybody that had a problem with it. That ending was phenomenal. I had done a good job of not being spoiled, of not being sure of what was going to take place. And as I'm watching the timer click down and we're getting to the end, I'm just on the edge of my seat waiting for, when is this going to get bad? When is the problem going to arise? And I found the ending to be phenomenal. And I'm really looking forward to season two. I thought the overall storytelling and the way that the story built upon itself was just an excellent, excellent done show. I think maybe the advantage I had was that I had all 13 episodes and I watched them over about a 5 or 6 day period. So I was able to see the story build on itself, and that the people who maybe watched it live, they had to have things drawn out. And maybe that was the problem that people had. I'm finding that watching things and being able to watch it back to back definitely is advantageous to having to wait week to week and watch it separated out. I found that true with Breaking Bad and The Walking Dead and Weeds. It's much better to watch the season after it's over. So anyways, keep up the great work with Pop Spotting, and I will talk to you later. Bye.
Mahalo for your call there, Don. And, well, so a second voice, a very strong endorsement of the much maligned The Killing.
I'm beginning to really change my mind about watching this show, because people have a lot to say about the Lost finale, too, and I happen to think a lot of them are really wrong. So,
well, to me, it's that I don't really join in on backlashes, but backlashes against backlashes, I'm on board for that. So who knows? We might give The Killing a shot, but I really, like Don was saying, and it's a question that comes up quite a bit. I mean, is it better to watch a series season by season only when you can marathon it rather than waiting week to week?
Marathoning is the way to go, because we're caught up with Breaking Bad, and now we're watching it week to week, and it's driving me crazy because I just need to know what's going to happen next.
I can see that. I mean, if it's the way you can do it, or for a lot of folks, it's the only way you can do it as far as premium cable goes.
Yeah.
So we certainly agree. If you can do it that way, that's probably a better way to enjoy a show, especially one perhaps as controversial as The Killing. But the topic that was really on everybody's mind was Game of Thrones after our conversation last week. So for that, we have another call.
Hi, Ryan. Hi, Jen. It's Aaron from Pasadena, California. Never called y'all before. Just want to take the opportunity to call in. Just saw Pop Spotting number 107, Game of Thrones. Glad you guys liked it. I agree with everything you said. It's going to be great stuff. But you forgot the wolves. I think the wolves are kind of important. That's all. Just want to pass that along. Thank you guys for doing great stuff. Thanks for being my friends. I'll talk to y'all soon. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Wow, it is really great to hear your voice, Aaron.
Yeah, we
thanks
kind of know you
call
so well just on Facebook, and it's really cool to hear from you.
And I've got to say, you're not the first person to point out that we've missed or we didn't talk about a lot some of the great characters on Game of Thrones. I would agree, the wolves played a pretty central role, at least one of them. And what do you think? I mean, they're clearly going to be part of the bigger story going forward.
Yeah, I believe so.
But we missed a lot of characters. There were a lot of people we didn't touch on, and for that, we have you. Tin Hoi Hu on Google Plus writes, "It's been too long since I've read the books, and I've just marathoned the first season of Game of Thrones. Great run so far. Hopefully not too much will have to be cut to squeeze the larger second book into a season. I totally agree on the acting as mentioned on the podcast, but what was overlooked was Aidan Gillen's performance as Littlefinger. He brought more depth to the character on screen than I got from the book."
Yeah, that's true, and I feel really bad right now that we didn't mention Aidan Gillen.
So here's your chance. How about that Aidan Gillen?
He's a little like medieval Carcetti, you know, his character
yes
on The Wire. Carcetti is a politician, and he really knows how to play the game, and he knows how to suck up. And I think Littlefinger does too, but I also think Littlefinger is a little smarter and more charismatic.
Well, what really struck me was the scene toward the end of the season where he has the showdown in a way, that conversation in the throne room with the eunuch.
Oh,
and
that
they
was
both
a good scene.
Recognize in each other that they've survived because they're essentially parasites. You know, they understand each other's nature. So
yeah,
it's a mutual kind of seething respect for each other. That's a great one. Let's see what else folks have picked up on.
Pat on the blog writes, "Thanks for covering the Game of Thrones series on HBO. I'm glad that you two liked it and could communicate how it worked for viewers who had not read the books. I'm glad you liked the performances of some of the major characters, but I'd also like to hear your impressions of some of the secondary characters like Lord Tywin, the Patriarch, or the Lannisters, and Ser Jorah, the exiled knight who's serving Daenerys. I also wanted to hear your impressions of Jon Snow and his situation in the Night's Watch at the Wall."
Well, again, you know, shame on us to not really cover some of these great characters. Any thoughts on Lord Tywin, the head of the Lannisters family, the person who's basically putting our favorite character, Tyrion, in harm's way?
It's really too soon to tell for him, but he seems to be kind of cruel considering the way his kids have grown up. But I think he's going to be just as interesting as all of the other characters.
For sure. And Ser Jorah, the knight who was kind of the advisor to Khal Drogo, and of course as well to Daenerys.
I wasn't sure about that guy because there was that whole scene where somebody was trying to poison Daenerys, and we weren't sure who was trying to poison her, and I didn't know what side that guy was on, and I was really kind of worried for a little while. But I think in the end he turned out to be a noble character.
Well, the other thing that I picked up on, at least Khal Drogo seemed to have a little bit of maybe jealousy or suspicion of him in terms of a possible relationship or attraction between him and Daenerys. I mean, if you were him, you certainly wouldn't get into something like that while Khal Drogo exists, but perhaps the way that things are left at the end of the first book or the end of the first season, I mean, do you think that's a possibility, or am I imagining all of that?
I don't know. I hadn't considered that.
Maybe I'm just a shipper at heart. And finally, Jon Snow. We didn't talk about him very much, but actually, I find his story and his performance one of the more compelling ones out of the entire ensemble.
He's a great character, and I think they're building something up that's going to happen on the Wall, and I can't really wait to see what that is.
Oh, absolutely. You've got, in fact, the daughter, the sword-playing daughter, who's going to be making her way out to the Wall as
Arya.
Well. So they're setting some really great things to happen. And we talked about how what we really like about the first season of Game of Thrones is that all of these machinations within these kingdoms seem like such small potatoes when you realize that there is a bigger deal, there's a bigger menace that's coming. And that, I think, is what we really look forward to.
And Pat had a few corrections for us.
Oh boy.
Bran is a true-born son of Ned, not an adopted orphan. We forgot to mention the Stark's youngest son, Rickon.
Ah.
And Theon Greyjoy is a hostage. Essentially, the Greyjoys attack the Starks, so the Starks are kind of keeping Theon as a hostage just in case the Greyjoys screw something up.
Right, they try to pull something else. What can I say? Pop spotting regrets the errors.
We were
move
confused.
On to Matt from Keys to Lost. He sends an email and says, says, I too was very much in love with this series, and Tyrion Lannister is definitely my favorite character of the series. I have begun reading the first book of the Song of Ice and Fire series, or Game of Thrones, and I can tell you that I think this is the way to enjoy the series in both forms. You will marvel at how well the series captured the spirit of the book, but will gain a greater appreciation for each character via storytelling method of the book, as each chapter tells events from the perspective of a single character. In this way, the TV series is fantastic, and reading the book afterward expands upon a great TV series.
Peter in Brooklyn writes on the blog, I'm glad you guys finally got around to covering this series. I'm a huge fan of Martin's books, and it's so gratifying for the story and characters to get greater mainstream exposure due to HBO's exemplary TV adaptation. Can't wait for season 2. No spoilers, but one small hint. If you thought the first season was great, just wait.
Oh boy.
I'm excited.
We are waiting. Absolutely. Well, thanks for all of those comments on Game of Thrones. Like you, we are fully aboard. We can't wait for the next season. A number of you mentioned on Facebook and on Google Plus the affection for the audiobooks on audible.com. They're not a sponsor of this podcast, but we would recommend you consider that as well if you want to perhaps listen to the books if you can't find the time to read it. It's on Jen's list, but I think it's like number 18 or 19. We'll get there eventually. Moving on to a couple of more comments on TV, first from the blog.
Pat writes, enjoyed your recent podcast immensely, especially Illyrio's enthusiasm with being part of a Buffy Watch podcast. It's not surprising how excited he is since they're now covering season 3. Buffy seasons 2 and 3 are what I consider the golden age of Buffy television. I'm not saying later seasons are bad, I'm just saying seasons 2 and 3 are nearly perfect.
Well, there's quite an endorsement from Pat, and we do really want to get into Buffy. I think Illyrio's, his enthusiasm was very infectious.
Oh, of course.
And I think it's a show that we might try to get into with our daughter, for example.
Yeah.
So thanks for that. And finally, from Pete in Illinois, he writes on Facebook about The Walking Dead. Although it's gorier than I expected, even for a show about zombies, it's been very enjoyable. I do feel that season 1 seems a little rushed, but not having read the graphic novel, I don't know how true the show is to the source. Either way, it's interested me enough to make sure that I tune in on October 16th. Much like you, I worry about the behind-the-scenes stuff that's going on at AMC, but hopefully the finished product isn't noticeably affected. Now, I don't know really much about The Walking Dead comic books. I, in fact, picked one up at Comic-Con, but for a friend, so I haven't even cracked it open. Are you interested in knowing how that goes, or do you think that the universes might split and you just want to stick with the television show?
I don't know. I think I want to find out definitively from a person who's a fan and then decide. I think if it stays true to the story, I'm really on board with reading it.
All right. Well, if you've read the graphic novels, then you can give us an idea of how it jives or doesn't with the TV series. I think we'd like to hear from you. I think Pat and Jan and myself and many of our listeners would be able to benefit from your perspective. Moving on, we also got a lot of great feedback after Jen's Songs of 1972 music list.
Eric in DC writes on Google Plus, this is great. 1972 was one of the best years of my life.
Aww.
I was young, stupid, and thought anything in life was possible. Sigh.
Well, we're certainly with you there. Greg M. writes on the blog, thank you, Jen. Love, Todd Rundgren. Something Anything is one of the best albums of the 70s. Hello, it's me. It wouldn't have made any difference, etc. He had a great run in the 70s, mixing genres, ballads, and such. Supremely talented.
Greg is a good friend of ours. He's behind the Pixar Talk blog.
Yeah, again, if you want to know more about Pixar, you got to check in with Greg M. And when we mentioned that we were doing a 1972 list, his first comment on Twitter was, there better be some Todd Rundgren on that list. So even before he had heard the list, he knew he wanted that artist there. Now we've got some lists that some of our listeners shared. David wrote on the blog, 1972 was such a great year for music. I was in high school at that time. Oops, there I go again, giving away my age. And here are 5 songs that really resonated with me during that calendar year in no particular order. You're So Vain by Carly Simon. I remember picking up Mick Jagger's voice and the backing vocals long before I ever heard anyone on the radio talking about
it. It's a good pick.
Rocket Man by Elton John. Does it make a lot of sense? Who cares? It's a true classic.
My dad likes that song.
Stuck in the Middle with You by Steeler's Wheel, in which we were introduced to the genius of Jerry Rafferty, though we wouldn't really know who he was until years later.
This song creeps me out, always, because of Reservoir Dogs.
Absolutely. Lean on Me by Bill Withers. I'm not generally big on message songs, but this one really works for me, and I thought the season 1 Glee cover of the song was excellent.
Around the time I was graduating from high school in the 80s. There was a really lousy cover of the song, and that was our class
and,
song.
You know, there you go. Another mention of Glee. And finally from David, Take It Easy by the Eagles, one of three 1972 hits from the Eagles' first album, one of the best debut albums of all time.
Yep, I really love that album.
And it's the song that's playing in the Big Lebowski, our Monday movie, when he gets thrown out of the car. I love these connections. Next up, Eric on the blog.
He writes, if I remember correctly, 1972 was a very big year for the Carpenters, perhaps their best year. My list, Stairway to Heaven by Led Zeppelin, Superstition by Stevie Wonder, American Pie by Don McLean, The First Time I Ever Saw Your Face by Roberta Flack, Angie by the Rolling Stones, and I Shot the Sheriff by Eric Clapton. Also, Dan Fogelberg.
Okay, any thoughts on Eric's picks? I mean, how about the Carpenters?
I actually grew up with the Carpenters. My mom had a couple of their albums, and she used to sing Rainy Days and Mondays to me.
Ah, okay. Anything else?
I'm a little ashamed that I didn't put Superstition on my list.
Ah, that might have made your top five?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great stuff there, Eric. Thanks, David, as well. We loved hearing how you reacted to the songs of 1972. And once again, if you want to hear more music shows, and I think you do, we need your help to come up with themes, to come up with topics, come up with ways to weave it into our wild card Wednesdays. So please get in touch. Send us your ideas. You can send an email at feedback@popspotting.net, or you can leave a voicemail at 815-310-0808.
But we heartily encourage you to post on the Pop Spotting page on Facebook at facebook.com/popspotting, where other listeners can see your comments and it can help start a conversation.
And you can start any topic you want there, or you can also post a comment on a specific episode on our blog at popspotting.net.
And you can also connect with us on Twitter at twitter.com/popspotting. Our personal accounts are Hawaii and Mrs. Hawaii. Mm-hmm. We spend way more time on Twitter than we should.
Absolutely, though I gotta say, I'm also spending a lot more time on Google+, so you can look for me there as well. We will be back soon with more Pop Talk. For now, we want to thank Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for making our theme song.
And mahalo to you for listening. For Pop Spotting, I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
Aloha.